All right, Hollywood Dreams. Body found on Santa Monica Beach. Santa Monica Beach, Santa Monica, California, May 21st, 1941. I wonder if you could just say Santa Monica Beach, California.
Because it's in Santa Monica.
Or you could just say Santa Monica, California, since you just started off telling us there's a body on the beach in Santa Monica. I don't know. Just having read that out loud for the first time just now, I was kind of like, oh, man, that's a lot of... I mean, all those Santa Monicas are appropriate.
There's some redundancy. Yeah.
So I wrote... Oh, man, I can't shift and scroll at the same time. I wrote a big, long suggestion for changing the opening. This. I think there's just a little, it just changes the order a little bit and, you know, a little bit of brevity. Because I started thinking about it. I didn't really think about it until I got down to the lower part of the first page where he's smoking a cigarette, about the light from a cigarette. And then I kind of thought, like, man, if it's dark and you're smoking a cigarette, what can you see or whatever? I don't know. It just got me thinking that maybe... to reduce like the number of times you got to say an action, like just have him start. I thought it'd be cool if he started out and he was already smoking the cigarette and looking at the scene from behind his cigarette. So as for the view of the beach behind the glow of my cigarette is one I've seen too many times. Even from the boardwalk, I could see the pale lump in the headlights of the squad car parked on the beach. And then went into the descriptions of the seashells and the white caps that you had in there. Had him, you know, take a nip out of his pocket or whatever. A nip out of his pocket. His flask out of his pocket and nip off the flask.
Okay.
And in this, I suggested that Grady be the officer who's at the barricade.
Okay.
And I thought... So I felt there was too much Grady, who's kind of a minor character, and not enough Monty, who's actually his partner.
Okay.
So I thought if you just put Grady right here, you could just have that stop and say, Detective Toom, he says, with unusual stiffness. He usually calls me Elijah. So boom, right there, you just introduce the main character's name. Okay. But now, because, you know, that way you have to go, yeah, my name's Elijah Toom. But out here, he had to be more formal, never know who would complain about a spook patrolman getting friendly with the detectives. Looks like you won the lottery tonight. I thought won the lottery was better than lost the lottery because...
To him, it would be, the other way.
If it was lost, then, you know, you don't get anything. He got a case.
True, true.
And then I'd gladly give you that ticket, I tell him, though I know the color of his skin has destined him to be a flatfoot forever.
Bye.
So I think the racial content that you had in this scene was a little heavy-handed.
Okay.
And so I think that just like, boom, right there, we've established that he's a black cop. And in L.A., if you're a black cop, you don't get promoted.
Yeah. Especially in 1941.
Right. Yes, I think even the most stubborn of us about the non-existence of racism in modern day would probably be open to the fact that in 1941, there's some racism.
Oh, straight up overt, man. Yeah.
And then I put in that part where you got the low. I like that addition you made about how you felt like he was on a drunk walk going across that sand. I thought that was cool.
Nice.
My loafers aren't made for the beach. My loafers aren't made for beach combing. And the sand creeps and feels like 40 grit between my toes. The way the sand shifts under my feet makes me feel like I'm on a drunk walk home. At least that's what I imagined. And then I added, at least that's what I'd imagine it would feel like. Truth is, it's been a while since I can remember a walk home.
Fair enough.
Yeah, no, check that out. Feel free to borrow any of it, all of it, none of it, whatever.
Okay.
But alrighty. I think that beach stream scene just needed some streamlining. I put in a little part where Grady says your partner's already down there. Because he just kind of shows up from Monty just kind of shows up from nowhere, and he has like a big long conversation with Grady. And I was just kind of felt it felt like all those case details he should have been talking to Monty about.
Okay. I gotcha.
So, and since he's kind of a, you know, slow mover anyway, Tomb, because, you know, I'm so assuming it came from Luz.
Yeah, most likely. So,
you know, whatever. You know, just because I read the story, I feel like he's coming from Luz. I don't know. And Grady, Monty's younger. So, and I don't even know if Monty needs to be from the East Coast or whatever, but either way, he's younger. You know, maybe he's a little more newer at the job. Maybe he's a little more gung-ho.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's see. But yeah, getting back to Grady, I kind of feel like every scene that has Grady in it, just kind of, you're kind of going out of your way. You know, that scene, this scene, the coffee scene, and there was like another scene. I was just kind of like, okay, we get it. LA's racist. Because in this version, it's like, yeah, Jim Crow doesn't just exist in the South, blah, blah, and you spend like a paragraph talking about it, and it's just kind of out of place. And okay. While Tomb is probably not an outright racist, probably, I don't know, I don't feel like him caring that much. It'd be like, Grady, right. I'm tired of you talking about the crap all the time. I get it.
Bye. Okay.
So, anyway, I think the scene will be more streamlined if we've already got Monty there. You know, Grady's a guy who just, he makes appearances throughout the book, so you have time to develop him. You know, that way you just introduce him there. We get more of Monty. We get the same description of the beach. So, anyway, that's just that whole first couple paragraphs I've highlighted. That's my comments there.
Okay. Definitely some stuff to chew on.
Yeah, here for the Jim Crow stuff, I just wrote that it feels forced. It feels forced to me.
Okay.
And I think, you know, especially since this is the beginning of the story, I think it's best if you just get into the story.
All right.
Yeah, just like, and then the next part I highlighted was just more conversation between him and Grady.
Okay.
That just feels a little unnecessary. Yeah, tell right. me if I'm cutting in and out from this stupid button pushing.
No, you're good so far.
Yeah, and then all this part, hey, what's worth, I think you guys get more hassle than you do. Oh, you get way more hassle than you. I was going to say, you guys? What do you mean by you guys?
I know, right?
Let's see. I thought the car on the beach could even be Monty's.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I don't know.
The nice bright blue Plymouth.
And I was trying to think of ways to like work in the whirling lights and stuff, but I don't even know if they would do that sort of thing back then or whatever. It just seems like it's gonna be overburdened with details, so I just was like, whatever, let you worry about that.
Ah, fair enough.
Now, I noticed you added in the names of people who actually found the body.
Yeah, I wanted to add in more details to the investigation already underfoot.
Yeah, man, I don't mean to sound like a racist, but yeah, it's just more Grady talking. I don't need him. I don't want to hear from that Grady.
All right.
let's see. I thought this Esmond scene was interesting.
Yeah, I thought I'd try
shaking hands and sharing booze. I didn't know what was happening. I felt like it was an alternate universe.
Mirror Edmonds.
Yeah. What do they call in Star Trek? The dark something.
Mirror universe, I think. Mirror
universe. Yeah,
I think. I decided to try to write Edmonds in with, like, you know, more of a colleague, friendlier tone, but also with kind of, you know, hey, I'm just busting your balls a little bit, kind of thing.
Okay. Like I didn't mind them disliking each other. I just thought the scenes can be rehashed a little bit. I think the disliking part, I think what it was is just that the combination of everybody in the morgue disliking each other. that was just between him and the old lady at the morgue. I was like, oh man, these guys.
Yeah, I gotcha. I gotcha. A little too much.
But yeah. Yeah, it was kind of funny. I mean, I think the scene is fine. It just took me a second to adjust to it.
Okay.
Sometimes you have to unlearn what I have learned.
Right.
Oh, he's talking about how the crabs feel between his fingers here.
Uh-huh.
I didn't really see him picking one up.
Yeah, I should probably change the order of that.
Now then he was imagining what it'd like to be filled. But yeah, I just need to see him pick him up, because right now he's just magically got one in his hands.
Well, have you ever held a crab outside of picking one up?
Yeah, well, I've held one by its shell before. I've never like let one sit in my hand or anything.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, I mean just the feel of their exoskeleton.
Yeah. I didn't mind that part. It was just like he had one and he never picked it up. Like, hey, I pick one up and its exoskeleton feels like it's just like, oh, there's crab on our body. Feels soft between my fingers.
Okay.
The alien armor. Wait, the exoskeletons are like rough alien armor between my soft fingers, but he never picked one up.
Okay. Yeah, I'll just change the order on that. That's an easy fix. I'll probably, play around with it too.
Oh, God, I swear, I thought this lady was a blonde. I don't think brunette is a hue. I don't picture that as being a hue.
Maybe it isn't. I don't know.
I just say brunette. And then I like that he wrote locked in a nightmare expression in his book.
Right?
Part of me was like, oh, come on, who would write that? And part of me was like, oh, man, that guy's just having some feelings. let's see. Another snort from my flask worms. I think he's drinking too much. Like, I know everybody knows he drinks, but it sounds to me like it's one of those, you know, like in a small town, everybody knows something, but nobody says anything about it, as long as it's behind your closed doors.
Ah, tongue-in-cheek, kind of. Yeah, don't ask, don't tell.
Yeah, he takes like three drinks and on this opening scene. It's kind of like, wow, that's a... Even if he needed something to calm himself, it seems just like that first pull would be like, okay, this will get me through until I can, you know, get some more.
Bye. Okay.
I'd like to see who's on the beach, because now you got the patrolman barfing, and then later you got a couple of patrolmen helping move the body. I'd kind of like to set the scene, like, hey, I get there, you know, Monty's there taking notes, you know, two or three uniformed guys are doing whatever.
Well, I had two uniformed guys holding the flashlights. Flashlights. I had two uniform guys holding the flashlights because I took the car out.
Was the car not here? Did I miss flashlight holding guys?
Uh-huh. You did. I'm looking for it here.
Oh, two officers holding flashlights. Oh, you know what? I think I just assumed the car was there.
Okay.
Because I just, you know, read three or four times about a car being there.
Right. That's all good. All right.
That's cool. I put the car in. These guys were there. All right. Fine. Two cops. All right. Where it says there's too many bodies to remember them all. I just kind of tighten that up a little bit. A suggestion. I've seen too many bodies to remember them all. First in the Great War as an ambulance driver, then as a cop. God, I don't remember. How'd you have? Oh, the first big war, etc. I think at this point, it would not be the first big war. I think it would still be the big war, or the Great War, or the World War, or whatever, because World War II hasn't technically started yet.
Ah, fair enough. We're just not in it. What's that?
Because we're not in it. It's not a war until we're there.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah, it's over the line.
Kind of like, I like this flashback to Playa del Rey. So here it says Grady gags again and pulls me back to the present. But you had just a cop, a nameless cop was the one gagging. Now Grady's gagging.
I missed that on my edit.
Edmonds. So a lot of stuff he's writing down, Elijah's writing down, seems like stuff Edmonds would tell him, or maybe already told Monty, or Monty would be right. I just think I had that thing kind of where I feel with all the Edmonds crime scenes, sometimes it feels like Edmonds isn't doing anything.
Even in this draft?
Yeah, because he disappears. I'll get to it. Okay, so here's Edmonds said, okay. Edmonds says, kneeling next to me, if you look at her wrists and ankles, she was restrained by a rope, most likely. The loss of this girl means something to somebody somewhere hits me. My fingers trace over the abrasions of her wrists and ankles. And then I assume that italicizes his notes?
Yeah, him writing.
She must have been restrained. Marks on her wrists and ankles suggest with rope. Is that him writing down what Edmonds says? Or is that just kind of repetitious? It kind of took me out. I was like, what?
Edmonds just said that. I mean, I don't know.
I would say something like, you know, when Edmonds says this, I look where he's pointing and write his observations in my notebook or something.
Okay.
It's just a little, something's a little off about it. The loss of what this girl means to somebody somewhere hits me. I'd like to see that earlier. It seems kind of late in the examination of the scene for him to like suddenly be all feeling that way, especially the guy who's seen a bunch of dead bodies.
Okay.
Yeah, Monty, if you're not going to have Monty there, maybe introduce him in a different way, because he just kind of magically appears, and I was like, whoa.
Okay.
I was looking at these spectacles, and a couple websites I found said they weren't created till the 1950s.
Yeah, that's news to me, because I actually pulled the idea from a couple online antique stores that were saying they were like 1940, 1939 Panto spectacles. So the antique shops were bullshitting people, and they bullshitted me too.
Maybe, because what I was reading was from the NHS, which is the English medical system. I don't remember what it stands for. My stuff was just saying that they were handing these out in the 1950s, and they were developed like particularly useful for bifocals or something like that. Maybe they technically were before the 1950s, and NHS just started, you know, using that style.
Maybe. But
the website I was reading, I don't remember if I saved it or not, was like it was an eyeglass company, and they just had like a history of eyeglass section. And then I went and looked at another website. I can't remember what that was, but both of them talked about the NHS making these glasses in the 50s.
Okay. I'll probably just take the Panto part out and just make them gold rimmed spectacles.
Maybe nobody will care. There'll be one guy. There'll be that one guy.
I know, right? This is impossible.
Who tweets you?
Right.
Just a couple of small things. Her dress is pretty snazzy. I changed that to was, because I think she's, you know, washed up on the beach, right? Oh, yeah, because he says what's left of it anyhow. That just kind of seemed... On the other hand, you know, maybe that's how he talks. That could be in there. I noticed you took out the movie part. They're discussing, oh, yeah, she's a good-looking maybe. good looking lady. Maybe she's a singer or something. You took out the movie part.
I think so.
Yeah. Why'd you do that? Cause that was a pretty, like, even if you change something later about the whole movie thing and those two girls or whatever, it still seems like something maybe they think. She got, well, a pretty face. She's probably shopping herself around.
Well, I did keep in, do you think she might be, this broad might be a Hollywood dame? I don't know. She's definitely camera friendly or was.
Oh, is that what that means?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, and then I just added this part. She could have been a high class pro skirt, because I read pro skirt means hooker on that website I was looking at.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Good call.
So I was just like, oh, that's kind of funny.
That is.
Put that in there. I need to use that somewhere. And I'm not writing war, so I'm going to stick it in there.
You cut yourself off there, man.
Yeah, I just thought it was funny, so I just added it.
Hey, right, cool. I'm glad you did. It's a good catch.
Oh, and then Edmund saying that couple who found her didn't think so. I forgot Edmund was there. So maybe that's why I kind of felt like Edmund wasn't working. I was like, why isn't he part of this conversation? What happened to him? Where'd he go? Now he's here. I thought he left. I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to work Edmund's in to the banter between Monty and Tomb. So it's like, my only other option is to take him completely out and not have a coroner at all.
I would have him in there. I like where he is. Like when Tomb gets there, there's the coroner. Hey, Edmonds, you know, they talk some crap to each other, whether it's friendly or non-friendly, whatever. And then Edmonds just says, hey, here's what I found. Here's my initial findings. You know, Tomb writes the stuff down and, you know, and looks at it. And then, you know, hey, thanks, Ed. And then Ed'll be like, or Ed's just like, yeah, I'll give you my, you know, full report after I examine the body back at the slab or whatever the slang is they use then. Ooh, I like that, the slab.
Right.
And then he could just go away, and then you've introduced Edmonds and, you know, hook up with him later in the morgue. And then you could just have him in. I'm sure the detectives want to look at their own stuff. So, yeah, I think just have him, just get it all the way at once. Because so one of the things I've noticed, now that we're on that subject, your descriptions are kind of interspersed. Like you're talking about the waves, and then later again, you go back to the waves, but it doesn't feel like it's a tie back. I just kind of like to get all your descriptions about things all at once.
Okay.
And then I want to see the scene all at once. I want to, unless there's a reason to tie back when you come back, like, you know, people could be parting the beach and then he looks out in the ocean again and, you know, whatever, has a moment, you know, then, you know, then that would be some kind of tie back that way or whatever. But I think you just have things spread out too much. So Edmund's okay. Like, just have all the Edmund stuff right away and then send him away. And then you've introduced him as a character and you don't have to worry about him anymore for the scene.
Okay.
Oh, dinner and a show. I guess that was just my comment for the line. What are we going to do? Have him come down here one by one.
Right.
Then you just do what they do on, was it Law and Order? Just flop pictures of the dead girl in their faces.
They don't have any pictures of her yet, though.
They have Polaroids, or they drop some Polaroids?
Not in the 40s, man.
I don't know when Polaroids happened.
Fair enough.
Nothing the rest of that page.
Okay.
Actually, not much on page 7 either. Except for the part, second paragraph from the last paragraph. We checked the spot where her body lay in the sand, but the usual beachcomber treasures only, nothing but the usual. That end of that meant.
Well, what do beachcombers look for?
Loose change.
Shells. Very flat rocks.
Okay.
I can toy with that a bit and see if I can make it more clear.
I would just say they didn't find anything. Remember, don't get heavy on the descriptions.
Yeah. True.
I think I skipped over it, but there's one of the wave descriptions I kind of didn't feel where you were going with it.
Oh, okay.
Larry. The fuck is Larry?
Larry's the reporter.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Scram, Larry. I'll give you something when I got something to give. It's always the hi-hat. It's always the hi-hat with you, Tomb. Why don't you go dry out somewhere and not be a jerk, Larry says, his tone clearly frustrated. And I wrote, show me. How do you like it?
Not that I didn't try. I was trying to figure out a way to kind of show that some more, but I'll work on it later.
It's no secret. The bottle has become a comfortable retreat for me. Where else should I kill time when the dreams I had are already dead? Or should be the dreams I have are already dead? Or just my dreams are already dead? Yeah, I'll just go with my dreams are already dead. The end of prohibition, the divorce, my best friend's knife in my back, called a technical knockout. Oh, I like that imagery. Called a technical knockout.
Right.
I'm fine with the ref throwing in the towel. Does the ref throw in the towel, or does the manager throw in the towel?
Oh, yeah, the manager. Yeah.
Or you just say, I'm fine throwing in the towel.
Well, I think if you go with the manager throwing in the towel, it's kind of a reference to the man upstairs.
So this was reminding me of something I wanted to talk about before, but had not written down or something. The relationship between Danny, who will come later, and Tomb. What if that was like an old timey, the two guys both like the girl and Tomb got him type of thing? And I was kind of thinking, what if Vivian was dead?
I've thought about that before, and Vivian, I haven't.
Yeah, like, and maybe each person, each one of the guys, blames it on the other guy.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of where I wanted to go with it, like, a while back, but, like, a lot of people I brought it up to were like, no, don't do that! So I was like,
I don't know. Oh. She just, and it's, well, in her current form, she's kind of non-existent, so.
She really is.
She is dead to me.
She's dead to me too, because I don't know what to do with her. I mean, and it complicates. Honestly, it complicates Tomb's and Danny's estrangement.
Yeah. So the only question, but if you were to do that, then my question would be, how long has it been, and what's Anna been doing? Has she been living with Danny instead of her dad? Because her dad was a drunk or whatever. And that's a point of contention to him. You got to figure, because Anna's, I don't remember how old Anna is. She's at least 18, right?
Yeah, she's like 18, 19, somewhere in there.
Yeah, so her mom's been dead for a few years. You got to figure out, you know, what her deal's been.
Okay.
And I think that's all I got.
All right, cool. Yeah, that gives me stuff to work with. I think I am going to make this I'm fine with the manager throwing in the towel. I think I'm going to make that the end of the first chapter. I might do Loose Tavern as the start of a second chapter, thinking about it anyway, because I'm thinking about trying to chapter this out differently.
Okay,
at least see how it looks, you know. Alrighty, works for me.
All right, which document do you want me to look at for Ghost?
I guess we'll just go with Google Docs, because I don't see the link for the OneDrive up anymore for some reason.
Oh, I deleted that because I figured you didn't need it.
Okay, start chapter 1, page 2. The stars were thick as marsh gnats and bright as lantern bugs when the woman opened her eyes. Ina hung above her like the centerpiece of a crown. I liked the opening sentence. I liked the visuals.
All right, I got a question right off the bat.
What's that?
Ina hung above her like the centerpiece of a crown. I was trying to figure out a better way. Originally, it said something about the centerpiece of the jewels up there. So anyway, the stars are think it's marsh gnats and lantern bugs. That's like a natural reference, and a crown isn't really a natural reference. So I was trying to think of something that would be more of a natural word connection than a, you know, a crown, which is, you know, actually made by people usually.
Ooh. Let me think here. What would accomplish that same thing, but something from the natural world?
Yeah, I thought about just changing it to a disc, but that sounds boring.
Right? Yeah. See, Ina hung above her like the centerpiece. Ina hung above her.
And then I thought about doing like an eye. Then I was kind of like, oh, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
All right. Who knows? I spent a lot of time on it. That was just.
You know what? Let me ponder on it. And if I come up with something good, I'll just throw it into the reply on the opening sentence, or I'll message you. I'll think on it and see what I can come up with that might reflect that natural world with still trying to kind of get that simile to play. So, okay. Let's see. Though she could name the moon, she could not name herself, but Ina's name was enough to soothe her. I liked that, you know, that, you know, it was something for her to hold on to in a whole like shitload of uncertainty. The follow up, something instinctual told the woman her own name was less significant in the moment. I felt that could be omitted because I kind of felt that that the sentence before it kind of does all that work. At least for me anyway, it did. So.
Okay.
Let's see here. She lay naked on her back in a moonlit field. The white tipped peaks of mountains thrust into the. She lay naked on a white tipped peaks of mountains thrust into the sky and loomed over her. I like the overall setting work that's done here. Gives me an idea that she's kind of like in a clearing. It's very much like, you know, valley-like, in that, you know, surrounded by mountains, or at least mountains on one side, at least the ones she can see. Let's see here. I got to, we're visible in the distance over the blade tips. It took me out because I was like, blade tips of what?
That was left over from an earlier sentence I revised. It's supposed to be grass. She talked about the grass before that.
That's what I figured you meant, but the actual nomenclature was like, I was like, ah, no, this took me out. No. So, yeah.
Swords all around her.
Yeah, swords and daggers all around. Oh, what was that from Space Hunter Adventures in the Forbidden Zone? Put her in the maze. Was it called the maze?
I think so.
Okay. Well, anyway. Okay. Let's see here. The woman closed her eyes. I thought the night burst to life could be omitted. I had made a suggestion of the woman closed her eyes and a cacophony of insect song, punctuated by the slap of bat wings and the grunts and pants of nocturnal predators assaulted her. So just some suggestions on that sentence there. I like the auditory details though. Kind of gives it lends itself well to the sensory detail.
I like that Google has decided you are anonymous raccoon.
Oh, nice. That's funny. Anonymous raccoon. Let's see here. I thought the chaos would work better than that chaos. On the next line down, called to her yet marrying the loose of a deep breath followed by a slow release and her attention focused on the wind. Rattled the leaves of trees and snaked around their trunks. Let's see, I suggested maybe going with like it rattled the leaves and snaked around the tree trunks. Just because it read kind of clunky for me on that sentence originally. Let's see, filtered through the grass and bent the long blades. Yeah, we already solved the tip of the blades thing earlier, so this was just in reference to if this came before that reference, then I think that reference would be more clear.
Yeah, I gotta rewrite that earlier part.
Yeah, so repetition of chaos had, I felt, wasn't really needed with faded because faded's already in the past tense. And then the simile here, faded into the distance like a brook that gurgled in the background. Is it like a gurgling brook in the background, or is there a gurgling brook in the background?
It's like one, like when water's running in the background.
Yeah, yeah.
You kind of don't notice, but you can kind of hear it.
Okay. Okay. But is there a creek gurgling in the background?
No.
Okay. I'm asking for a friend. let's see her. The woman rolled onto her side and lifted her head slightly to see over the blades of grass. I'm noticing a repetition there. Her head felt heavy and dull, like a useless weight on her shoulders. And there was an odd tingle in her ears. I noticed you changed the horse from an Appaloosa to a Palomino.
Yes. Was that a question
or an observation? No, I was just saying I noticed it. I was wondering why the change?
I've kind of thought, because I had Appaloosa first because it was a horse that really stood out. It's, if you know even a little bit about horses, you kind of know what an Appaloosa is.
Yes.
But I decided a long time ago I was going to change it to Palomino because, you know, the Palomino is like that gold, yellow gold color, you know, that image of her riding around on this golden horse.
Okay. Alrighty, that works. Okay, let's see here. Its coat shined under Ina's light, and the pose reminded her of a golden idol crafted by a master metalsmith. Now I'm just wondering for my own curiosity. Would it be a master metalsmith that she remembers from the life that she has forgotten in her amnesia?
No.
Okay. I was just wondering for my own curiosity.
I don't even know if metalsmith is the right word.
Okay.
I know it's not sculptor.
I don't know. But I mean, I was fine with it. I was just wondering if it was like connected to the life that, you know, her previous existence. It was like the woman felt a spark of recognition, but the horse merely flicked its ears and swished its tail before the Palomino returned. In her periphery, I added she saw something gleam in the grass. She wanted to reach toward it and touch it, but changed has to had a hypnotic quality. See, she closed her eyes and wondered if the horse knew her knew. And she closed her eyes and wondered if the horse knew who her name. Let's see. I guess just cut who.
I'm going to switch over to suggesting mode. Knew her name before she drifted back into darkness. The woman woke to the hot, slick tongue of the Palomino on her face. On my first read, I felt the sentence was a little clunky. I suggested the woman woke to the Palomino's hot, slick tongue wet her face. I don't know. Could go either way. But I'm liking how we are kind of coming into this scene, this setting with her as she's like trying to gather her senses. So I mean we're kind of getting thrust into this and trying to normalize it with her. So I am digging that. Let's see, closer. The horse's coat lost some luster. It was still a radiant gold, but reminded her more of a painted canvas than a gilded statue. The fine individual hairs of the coat reminiscent of the lines of brush strokes. I liked that. I really liked that. I thought it was, conjured a really great image that also had kind of a duality to it. Of flesh and blood, but also like a manufactured masterpiece as well. And then I just made a comment of like possibly that the lines of felt extraneous, because I mean I felt the kind of brush strokes already handled that. I liked the try at alienness. I actually even Googled it just to go, is there any record of this, having been used anywhere before? So I was just curious, but I almost wondered if incongruous could work instead.
I'll think about it. Apparently alienness isn't a word.
Yeah. I thought it could be. Hey, you know what though? Writers make up words all the fucking time. So, I mean, if you wanted to
all words are made up.
Exactly. So, I mean, if you wanted to keep it, dude, I'd be cool with it, but I figured I'd throw out a suggestion for it anyway, cause that's what we do.
I don't know why it's telling me horse is misspelled, cause it's not showing me it's misspelled anywhere else.
I know, right? Yeah. Cause horse wouldn't be the same as horse. Cause it like suggestion for spell check, it just wants like horses and the animal. And I'm like,
yeah, that's weird.
I'm like, no. her tongue felt like a rough, dry rag. I kind of felt that filled her mouth wasn't needed. She became acutely aware of the need for water. I kind of felt the tongue being like a rough, dry rag did that heavy lifting. The frigid wind swept a wave of goosebumps that swept to attention across her naked flesh. I think one of those sweeps needs to go. The woman's eyes swung instinctually toward Ina, which had propped toward the mountain. She lifted a hand toward it's Ina, right?
Yes.
Okay.
But it sounds fine the way you say it too.
Okay, cool. Then I will just make sure to stick with one of those two. She had sense of the moon. Let's see. I had made a suggestion. Let's see, where was this at? Oh yeah, maybe go with moon here since there was another use of Ina close to this. Also, wouldn't she be seeing two moons, or is something different with her perspective now?
I don't know. I didn't think about that. Part of me is kind of like, maybe since she's cut off, she doesn't see it yet. Maybe she can only see it from the veil side. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, I kind of wondered the same thing, but I also, and I'll get into it as we, I'll get into it when we get down to the part. But anyway, moving on for now. But then I had like written like, darn, we have moon here. Would create a proximity issue with my last suggestion. I'll let you figure this one out. Despite the cold, the woman thought she could continue, or wanted to. I was just, you know, asking questions like I do. let's see. I know the woman said hoarsely to lie there was dangerous, was a dangerous thought. She knew, aware of the cold that seeped into her. I thought through her could be omitted and just seeped into her from the wet grass. And then I've just been highlighting grass because there's a lot of appearances of the word grass, but I don't really know how to get around it. And there's only so many ways you can say grass, you know? So it's like, yeah.
When you're talking about actual grass.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like when you're like referring to grass, I mean, there's only so many ways you can say grass, but I figured I'd highlight them because there was a repetition going on, but I don't know. It's just, yeah, it's kind of one of those, it might end up being a necessary evil since repetition can be evil. It isn't always evil. Fire burned at the sides of her head through her ears, and the stars shifted and blurred. She touched an ear and gasped with pain. Let's see. Though her short hair was matted down with water from the morning dew, her eyes easily discerned the dark blood on her fingers. I wondered if, like, her hair being matted down would be more from the blood than the dew. I mean, because the grass is bloody where her head was. Just, yeah, just one of those things I wondered about.
I think it's both. If anything, the blood would be watered down from the water.
Oh, yeah. I suppose that's true. Let's see. Repetition of meadow. I made a suggestion of just to clear up one of the uses of stripped that are close together was and gathered more water until the tremors in her hands became too much to hold more than a few drops. let's see here. I liked this addition of the knife. Her finding this dagger. Let's see here. It was an inch wide, and the end curled into a cruel-looking hook at the end. At the end, I felt could be omitted because you already have at the end curled into a hook. So, let's see here. And I just had some minor suggestions on tightening up the sentence about the dagger and the person's ear and her imagining how it could be used for what was done to her. Let's see, the blade was set into a bone handle, the cloven hoof of a small herd animal. I kind of felt this could warrant a semicolon just because it feels like two separate sentences that are referring back to the same, you know, the same thing. Fruitive. I thought that was an interesting word choice. Enjoying, possessing.
Interesting, as in it's a cool word, or interesting as in when somebody does something dumb and you're like, that's interesting.
Oh, I don't think it's something dumb. I find it interesting because like I had to look up the definition.
Yeah, but it's supposed to be furtive.
Okay. All right.
So it's not even the right word.
That's fair.
But tell me what that word means.
enjoying or possessing. I was like, she's possessing the dagger, sure, but enjoying. So yeah, no worries. I was just,
yeah, it's supposed to be a different word.
Okay, never mind then. Let's see. The woman buried the fear. She had greater concerns of more immediacy. I felt just from a minimalist aspect, maybe just more immediate concerns. Let's see here. Palomino came next to her and lowered his neck. The woman draped her arm around his neck and grasped his mane. Yeah, I just highlighted repetition there. She steadied herself with one hand against the horse and bent down and stabbed the dagger into the ground. I was like, why not just throw it in the ground? Just from how, you know.
Yeah, I can picture her doing it partly because there's no actual tip on it or the tip curls around.
True. Okay.
So you'd be hitting with the round part, and because I kind of figured maybe she was too weak to do it.
I got you.
I feel like I should clarify that she's doing that so the handle's sticking up, so when she comes back, she can find it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that'll work. It was just one of those, again, just one of those things that I had to ask the question. You know, it was just because the question popped in my head when I read it, and I was like, oh, I'll ask about it. repetition of moon. I liked that she doesn't like have a firm connection to Ina at this point. It's like her ears are severed, she's severed, the connection's severed, and she's like trying to pull it back together. Definitely feels like she's having more of a struggle in this draft than the last draft, which I have liked because our characters need to suffer.
Yeah, I was trying to draw it out more.
Yeah, I like what you're doing here. It's like I was writing. I like her struggle here to keep the connection. She's really having to work through this moment, and clearly work toward renewing this connection that she must have had before to Ina. So yeah, I liked it. I need to find Shelter Boy, she said to the horse. I don't think the horse was needed. You could probably omit that if you want to. The Palomino must have been 16 hands. Yeah, I think she mentions that earlier. But I mean, I think making the reference again probably couldn't hurt. But yeah. Skin smelled like sweat and grass. His shoulders felt firm and muscled. I like the details, the scent, and the touch there. It seemed a good place to die. And I was like, she's really resorting to some finality here. I can't do it, she thought, and closed her eyes. The horse, shifted under her, bent the knees of his forelegs, and dipped his head. She slipped over his shoulder as hope returned to her. She clutched at his mane again and pulled herself onto his back. I thought she was already on the horse.
No, he just lifted her to her feet earlier.
Okay. I gotcha. Let's see here. She tried to grip the horse's sides with her knees, but cold had taken strength away from her, and she bounced about the Palomino's back, and she had to rely on her grip on the horse's mane to stay in her precarious position. I thought you could omit horses and just keep mane. And I liked this because it kind of had a branch back to the earlier draft with the star, and like knowing that the star, you know, the stars wouldn't betray her. But in this case, it's more referring to Ina than the stars, which was she knew they were headed northwest even as they entered the trees and their branches covered Ina. The woman knew where the moon was, knew Ina would not misguide her despite their tenuous connection. She was confident as long as the moon circled the sky, she would never be lost. I like that. I like that sentiment. And I think it's a good change. Let's see here. Again, I like the sensory details. The pine tree shielded most of the wind, and the woman lay forward and pushed as much of her bare skin as she could against the horse. It was a confused sensation, the warmth down the front of her body and the chill across her backside, but it calmed her shivers to more manageable proportions, though the creep of numbness continued. I thought that was good. They had traveled less than 10 minutes when they emerged from the woods at the top of a hill. They assaulted her with renewed vigor. What assaulted her?
The wind.
Oh, okay. Here, I'll just throw in a suggestion there then. But in that moment, as the woman looked across the valley, there was a repetition of valley here. Let's see here. A verdant valley stretched for dozens of miles until it ran into the foothills of another mountain range. To the west, where the pink light of dawn crept upon the peaks, through the center of the valley wound a ribbon of silver light that sparkled under Ina's light. Let's see, a hypnotization of her senses. I like the introduction to the valley. Definitely a scenic quality about it. You get a feeling of like a wide open range. Definitely a valley, like surrounded by mountains. Almost kind of like here. Let's see. A series of thunderclaps startled the woman from her reverie and brought with them an intense awareness of the wind. She trembled with renewed violence and clutched at the horse's mane to prevent falling off his back. Her eyes swept the sky but saw no clouds. The sharp sounds came to her again and peered down the hill. I like the setting up the attack on the squatter house, the corn. See, half dozen rows of corn and some other crop were planted directly across from the home, and an unpainted barn with a corral sat between them off to the side. There were dead animals scattered about the yard, and men on horseback rode over them, fired their guns at the scattered chickens and randomly at the squat house. The men whooped and shouted, and there was something odd about their mounts. The horses moved in a stiff and unnatural manner as if they were wounded. I liked the observation about the horses from the woman's perspective and how she felt they were odd and how they moved. It's like, I almost kind of wanted a little bit of more from her on that, but I don't think she would have really went into more on that because she's freezing her ass off and there's people shooting at a house. So yeah. But it would be interesting to get her take on steam horses a little later though. Like, does she find them blasphemous? Does she find them like, is there any like feeling that goes toward them that is like, this is an abomination to the natural world kind of thing? I don't know. I am curious. Let's see here. Let's go. She said to the Palomino. The horse shook its head and snorted. I know, but I need to trust someone. Maybe we can help whoever lives there and get to a fire. I was wondering if she might see smoke from a chimney to give her an idea that A, anybody's even in there. B, if it's a home, or C, if it's like, if these guys are like a posse after criminals that are like just like locked up in this place. I don't know. But yeah, I was just kind of like, I had written, not sure that's a safe assumption on her part if she didn't. I don't know. Just throwing that out there. The thread, and I like how she's starting to wind this thread back together. So she swallowed her desperation, tucked it deep inside her. The thread formed in her mind, and warmth flooded into her. As it did so, more threads grew and strengthened, and soon the trickle of warmth was a flash flood of heat. I liked that because it escalates quickly. River of fire swept through her as if it burst from a dam. She became aware of a brightness, a white-hot glow that stripped the shadows away from the cornfield they now rode through. To her horror, she understood it was her. She tried to break the connection. And I like that this throws her a bit. Her amnesia feels a lot more damning and with a lot more hurdles than previously. Pictured her hands like claws to tear at the threads. I liked that. Had a good imagery to it. Fear she would freeze to death transformed to fear that she would burn within. I like that juxtaposition. Kind of turns her original fear on its head a little bit. The guns were massive. The guns were massive explosions in her ears. She could smell the acrid smoke, taste the soot in the air. She was assaulted from within and without. I like that. I like the sensory details, but I also like the she was assaulted from within and without. I like that there was no part of her that felt soothed, no part of her that felt safe, no part of her that felt even like the slightest amount of okay. When the Palomino and woman charged out of the cornfield, the men turned toward them, agape with awe and terror, the wide O's of their mouths. I don't know, the O's thing took me out. A gape with awe, I felt, captures it pretty well, but that was used in the preceding sentence. I thought maybe trying to combine the two sentences. Let's see. The men scattered away from them. A few raised their weapons that shook in uncertain hands. The woman screamed, a shriek of the eternal damned, and the light burst forth in all directions. I liked the shriek of the eternal damned, and I liked the light bursting forth. And the shriek like has very much a banshee quality about it. Very, on that note, kind of dances in the macabre with the otherworldly, with paranormal, and it does a lot of work there. I like it. So I say good job on this revision, dude.
I was worried I didn't have enough in the beginning. I'm still kind of worried. I worried about that a lot about my work because I feel like I leave a lot of stuff out. So like the first revision was less than a page.
Yeah.
And I actually added a couple paragraphs to it to get it a couple sentences onto the next page. And this is double space. It's not even single space. But when I go back and look, I'm like, I don't see anything else I can put in there without weighing it down with unnecessary things.
Yeah. And I have sometimes the opposite problem where I put too much in out of the same fear though, that, you know, I'm going to end up too light. So I see what you're saying there.
Yeah. Cause I'll get to a point and I'll be like in the story I wrote for Nano, I got to this point where these two guys were kind of swearing themselves as other person. And I was like, oh, this is too fast. I shouldn't be here already. I don't know. I just was wondering, man, can she have more observations in this meadow? What else can I be doing? Or, you know, I'll read another book where they're kind of like tying things together with, you know, observations of the character or whatever. And I don't have a ton of that.
Here's a thought, it reaches out toward that idea of Ina and kind of the safety or the sense of, I guess being okay as long as Ina's there. I almost wondered if there could be like a moment where she, you know, like studying the moon, and try to pull something forward that maybe doesn't come, you know, as like regarding her memory, maybe spend a little bit more time on the sensations of this connection that are more or less severed. But also that kind of have that, you know, like maybe arcing frayed ends. I don't know. That's just kind of the first thought that comes to mind.
Yeah. Okay.
Because I mean, I noticed you did some work with that on there, and I liked what you did with the connection. You did some work with Ina and the connection and the separation of that connection. And I like the work you did there. I'm just trying to think of things you can maybe try to fill in there that
it's probably fine. I don't know.
I like the way it reads. And I mean, honestly, I'd almost be concerned that it would get too weighed down. I don't know.
All right. Well, that's good. My goal was to try and, because I am trying to make the book longer, I have a lot of relationships to establish and stuff, but
yes, you do.
I wanted to draw out her return to the connection to the moon, because it happened pretty fast in the first draft. even though she did lose control when she got to that cornfield in the first draft, I kind of wanted it to be, you know, her, it seemed more realistic for her to not have control when she reached the farmhouse, because she'd been trying so hard to get that established connection. And then once she got that connection, she doesn't know what the hell to do with it.
Yeah. Damn broke. Yeah. And she's, yeah, she doesn't know how to limit it, how to control it, how to, yeah. Yeah. I do like that. Agreed.
Came across.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
No, you sound so much better when you're leaning forward.
Oh, okay. I'm gonna have to put this on a mic stand or something.
Is your cord long? Can you pick it up and bring it back with you?
I can pick it up like this and do this thing. I don't know if you can hear me pick it up though. You might be able to.
No, I didn't.
Okay. Let's see here. I had an idea about something and I'm trying to remember what it was now. The dagger. When she finds the dagger. Ah, here we go. Okay. Yeah, when she let's see. Yeah, when she's she didn't need to stretch her imagination to picture the blade hooked around a person's ear. Once all would yank is all it would take. I almost wonder if you could spend a second longer with that feeling. Like, because she knows the score. She knows what's up. And like looking at like the harbinger of her destruction being held in her hand. Like, I don't know. Is she even in a cognitive capacity to even like process that? I don't know. I'm just asking questions.
I was going to go back and add something to that. I want to put some like pieces of flesh and shit on it.
Yeah. I mean, even more detail to that would work.
That's like the dagger. I mean, the dagger they used to cut her ears off, but the dagger she, you know, killed them with is what that is going to be. Whether I get into that or not, I don't know.
Okay.
But I figured out, I was like, oh man, there should be like some guts and pieces of flesh or something hanging off this thing.
That would be cool. And yeah, I mean, just getting into a little bit more on the dagger could help, you know, kind of add a little bit more meat without getting overweighted as what kind of the fear is with the scene. So that might work. I don't know. You might play with it and see what happens.
All right. I think that's a wrap. Hey, everyone. Jason here. Thanks for tuning in to our first workshop. Sorry we don't have any fancy music or intros, just straight hot editing takes. The Pacific Novel Project is Steve Childress and I going through the writing and publishing process, from our crappy first drafts and drafting to design and publishing. We are demonstrating what it's like to have someone, not yourself or a friend who's too nice, review your work, point out what's working and what's sucking, and identifying issues that need to be fixed. Please take a moment to check out our Patreon at patreon.com/Pacific Novel Project. There you will find lots of great content for subscribers. For a couple dollars a month, find the edited drafts of our shitty first drafts and the current drafts that we're doing for this podcast. You can download them and follow along with us. We also have a 200-word short story challenge, which we're hoping to turn into some kind of contest if we get enough patrons, fun writing prompts, and articles on writing. And it will also include our monthly Bring Your Own Book Club podcast. Once a month, Steve and I analyze a book, sometimes related to our genres that we're writing and sometimes not, and members get to suggest the books. So it could really get crazy. You never know what we'll be reading. And at higher levels, it'll include a digital copy of the book, so you wouldn't even have to bring your own book. And that also do some editing assistance and private meetings. Funds from patrons primarily go toward funding and publishing elements of our novels, art, advertising, etc., and hopefully more time to work on our craft. And that's going to be part of what we're doing, you know, going through the publishing. How do we get this published? How do we advertise this? What's the best platform to use? We're just going to get into all those discussions as we research them. Or you can just keep listening to this podcast. Hopefully it's informative and inspires you to keep writing. There's still plenty for you to involve yourself with, even if you're not a patron. I think we can have a nice little writing community going where we inspire and help each other and just commiserate, share our angst with the world, because the internet is a kind and loving place. So, for Steve Childress, this is Jason Keith. Thanks for joining us, and write on.